All right. Good morning, everyone. I hope you're enjoying the show. I'm certainly enjoying being here in the Netherlands. I'm Andy Wigley. Oh, by the way, just please make sure you give us all your feedback. I've been asked to put this at the beginning and at the end. It's really important to us that we hear from you what you like and what you don't like so we can always improve the quality. So please let us know by feedback or give your feedback via the website, and there's great prizes as well. I'm Andy Wigley. I work out of the UK. I've been heavily involved in building content out for Windows Phone 8.1 over the last few months. I'm going over to Redmond in 2 weeks' time to record the latest set of Jumpstart videos. Has anybody seen any of the Jumpstart videos from the past? No. My God, you are a few nodding ones there. Good, okay. Well, and I'm not saying everybody should see it, but I mean, they're very popular, and there's going to be 2.5 days of live training to camera. I mean, it all gets recorded, so because we'll be doing it on Pacific Daylight Time, so we're kind of starting at, 1600 hours Central European Time. So that means we're going to finish around about 2 o'clock in the morning, so that's probably not the best time for everybody. So everything's getting recorded, it'll be on Channel 9, and also will also end up as a Microsoft Virtual Academy training course. So that's coming up in 2 weeks. So what I'm going to give you today is some of that content. It's actually bits from, I think, 5 different sessions from the Jumpstart. Because what I wanted to try and do is give you a sort of run-through of the essential stuff you need to know to build Windows Runtime apps for Windows Phone 8.1. So we're talking about using what was, up till now, the way you built Windows Store apps for big Windows. That app stack, that XAML, that flavor of XAML and the app stack around it, that's all now down and now is available on Windows Phone 8.1. So if you're a XAML-based developer on Windows Phone 8.1, you've got two choices now. You can stay with the Silverlight for Windows Phone app technology that we've been using to build XAML-based apps right from the beginning of Windows Phone 7. That's still available, and all of the new Windows Runtime APIs, all the kind of background tasks, the geofencing, the Bluetooth LE stuff, all the great new stuff that we've got in Windows Phone 8.1, you can still use all that from a Silverlight app. But I'm not going to talk about Silverlight this morning. This is about using the Windows flavor of XAML. So the way that apps work is slightly different. So if you're, how many of you currently would call yourself a Silverlight XAML app developer? Just a few of you. Okay, that's good. Well, there'll be a few points for you I'll call out. Things that you're, you know, are different from what you're used to. For the rest of you, you don't know about the old stack anyway, so that's cool. So I'm going to tell you about what's the differences for building Windows XAML apps, the same flavor you may have been used to for building Windows Store apps, but building them for the phone. Right, so first of all, in Visual Studio, I've got a ton of content, so I'm going to keep the pace up. First of all, in Visual Studio, you've got lots of different ways you can create apps. In the new project templates, we've got, from the top there, as it says on the left there, you can use to create native apps using HTML and JavaScript. So we've got the WinJS model is available for Windows Phone. I'm not going to talk about that this morning. I'm talking about XAML-based apps. So within the XAML-based apps, you've got 3 categories, which is universal apps, which is where you're building one solution and that spits out 2 different, you know, different app packages, one for Windows Store and one for Windows Phone. You can just create purely for Windows Store apps, so for big Windows. And you can create purely Windows Phone 8.1 apps through the new project templates. And none of these are dead ends. You know, if you create a Windows Phone 8.1 app, you start off with that, and later on you want to add a big Windows version of it, you can just right-click on it and say, oh, add Windows to this solution. And it'll add another project in, and you can build out your Windows UI. So there's no dead ends here, but loads and loads of different options. And as it says, obviously, as you scroll down, you'll see that it changes. At the top, you've got kind of the project and then brackets Windows Phone. These are all WinRT XAML flavors. And then as you go down, and then down the bottom, you'll see it starts changing. You get blank app all over again and data-bound app, and it says Windows Phone Silverlight. So these are all the Windows Phone 8 project templates, which then are in the same list. So you've got a choice there. You've got to choose between Windows Phone, which is WinRT XAML, or Windows Phone Silverlight, which is the old way of doing it. And when you look at, obviously, what's the contents of a Windows Phone Store app, a WinRT XAML app, You've got your solution, your project, no surprises here, I'm sure, for you, and your usual references, but this time you've still got a bit of .NET for Windows Storage, and then Windows Phone App, which is the WinRT XAML libraries, if you like. All the assets, all your tile artwork, the little icon that will be in the apps, the programs list on the phone, all that stuff is in there. Then you've got your app.xaml. I'm sure for anybody who's built XAML apps, there's no surprises here. App.xaml, which is your kind of bootstrapping code, your global class that's where the app starts up and where your startup logic is, and your common resources. And then you've got typically one page in a new project, and you'll add extra pages. So you've got main page, and as you can see, every XAML, you've got a XAML and then a code beside it. So the actual class consists of a XAML page and the .C# or .VB, or actually now in Windows Phone, you can do .C++ as well. So we've got those three options for you. And then you've got an app manifest, which is your configuration stuff. So that's where all the stuff that you put in there, you declare what it does, what capabilities it needs, and that all goes into the store and is ingested when you submit it up to the store. So that's the kind of anatomy of an app. Now, when you're building out your UI with Windows XAML, we've got a whole bunch of controls. So when we brought the Windows XAML stack onto Windows Phone, we massively expanded the control set. But it's a converged control set. What do we mean by that? We divide it into three kind of categories. Not because there's any programmed in different way, it's just that it kind of helps to think of them in this way. So first of all, you've got your common controls. So these are standard buttons and checkboxes and this kind of stuff. And when you use one of these controls in your UI, it will render exactly the same when you use it on Windows Phone as it will if you use it on big Windows. So they're just common controls. You know how these work. All the standard stuff. Then we've got this category called optimized controls. And these are kind of interesting because you program them exactly the same whether you're using them on the phone or you're using them for big Windows. So the XAML is the same, the API is the same, but actually when it renders at runtime, the control itself has built into it the ability to adapt its rendering according to what platform it's running on. So the classic example of that is the date picker, which on Windows Phone is the classical full page swipe, the round circle things that you can select your dates, and that's how it renders, seen on the right there. But on big Windows, it's drop-down boxes, which makes more sense on a tablet. And this makes more sense thing is something you want to kind of keep hold of. You know, we didn't give you in this release one project that will automatically run on both platforms. You could kind of do that, but there'd be a lot of... Didn't turn my phone off, excuse me. Right, turn this off, just a minute. The optimized ones, yeah, so you... What was I saying? You're programming them, and they'll adapt themselves automatically. And this thing about keeping in mind that they are different platforms, and the kinds of user experience is subtly different. You're going to be communicating the same information, but the way the user interacts with that is going to be subtly different. You think of a phone, you're typically using it in portrait. A small tablet, you typically use it in portrait, sort of under 8 inches. You tend to hold it like that. And as soon as you get to sort of 10 inches and above, 9 inches and above, it almost feels right to hold it in landscape. There's differences with that, of course. But you've got to think about these kind of things. And some of these controls will help you with that, and they'll have this these adapted renderings. Now, the last category, they're just a collection we call signature controls. And there's some controls listed in here, which are just in here. The point about these controls is they encapsulate the Windows user experience. So they have all the right animations and the touch feedback that users who are using apps on our platforms expect. So you're building apps, third-party apps, using these controls. You get all of the kind of look and feel that you kind of expect on these platforms. So there's the signature full-page ones, the page layout controls, such as the hub and the pivot. They're already pre-designed to make it easy for you to build out app experiences that just feel right and work well on the platform, make the best of the platform. And then I've got the list view and grid view, and these are sort of just the list controls. They do encapsulate all the sensitivity and the way that the user swipes with touch, and that kind of behavior is all built into them. But actually what a list shows is, of course, it's entirely up to you as the designer. You're designing data templates and figuring out what it actually looks like in terms of the actual data items they're looking at. But the actual way that the user interacts with it is kind of baked into these controls. So these are your kind of signature ones that help you to create great experiences. So those are the categories. I'm just going to run very quickly through some of them, and most of this won't be much of a surprise to you. Give you some examples. The common controls, obviously, we've got all the standard text handling ones, text blocks, we've got rich text block, text box. There's a lot of new features if you're used to coming from Windows Phone 8 Silverlight. We've got nice header text that's in the control, a lot more templating, so a lot more flexible than we might be used to from Windows Phone 8 and before. And we've got a password box, so all the standard ones you would expect for text. But one thing is phone-specific thing. So with a touch screen, of course, when the keyboard comes up, you'd get like the standard keyboard. Now, in fact, which is the one at the top there. The variant of the one at the top there. But then actually, if you set an input scope on a text box, you can influence the keyboard layout that the user gets displayed. So the top one there is an input scope of email SMTP address. So it actually has on the keyboard, it has the @ and then the different extensions. And if you tap and hold on .com, you get all the other ones, you know, .co.uk and .nl and all these kind of stuff would come up on it. So, and then you've got currency input amount and symbol, and then the bottom one is the number. So you can really influence the way that the keyboard is displayed, so make it appropriate for the kind of input that that the user is going to put into that field. Now, just beware, I mean, this isn't kind of, you're not kind of constraining the input. The user could still have cut some text, copied from text from somewhere in an email or something, and paste it into your text box that you're expecting numbers to go in. So you've still got to do your input data validation. But if they're using the keyboard for direct entry, you can give them a lot of help here. And obviously we've got buttons and hyperlink buttons, and they're super flexible, and there's a few examples on the slide there of a simple button and then a bit of customization so you can change the border and the background. And then you can completely retemplate a button. That Microsoft Surface 2 is a button. So a button can be anything. It's just something that the user activates, you know. But the button control gives you that essential behavior. I like this. I like to think of XAML controls, and somebody said this ages ago when this stuff first came out. They're essentially lookless. A control is lookless. A control actually encapsulates a user interaction, the way a user interacts with something. But what it appears like, what it looks like, well, actually, yeah, sure, out of the box we give you some standard renderings. But every control underneath the wrappers, why it looks like it does is because in the framework we've got templates that define that look. And you can override them till the cows come home. So this button in the middle, the one in the yellow grid, is a heavily customized button where you've decided, no, I don't like the standard button, I want it to look completely different. It's still a button, but it looks quite different. And the hyperlink at the bottom. And we've got a bunch of others as well. No surprises with any of them, I'm sure. And we've got a bunch of progress rings and progress bars, obviously very important in any modern app, that whenever anything is happening that's causing some kind of delay, you need to keep the user informed that actually we're still doing something for you. So progress rings and progress bars are very good. So different flavors of that for showing those sort of things. Now some examples of optimized controls. I already called this one out, the date picker and the time picker. These are exactly the same API, but then the rendering is platform appropriate. And they're heavily customizable, so you can choose to show bits of it and not other bits according to the particular scenario you want to use these for. Flyouts are interesting. So this is new for Windows Phone developers. We didn't really have flyouts as such in Windows Phone 8 Silverlight. The menu flyout is the new way of doing the context menu. So for the Windows Phone 8 Silverlight devs in the room, you would have used something in the Silverlight phone toolkit for that. Well, it's now baked in, and the menu flyout is what you can use for doing context menus. All of these are what we call light dismiss flyouts. So the point of a light dismiss thing is that and this assumes this is not a full page flyout. So let's say you've got a flyout that's at the top of the screen. It means that if the user taps out away from the control, it automatically dismisses. That's what light dismiss means. But then a lot of them actually come up. The two pictures on the right, on the phone, again, this is one of those kind of platform-specific renderings. It actually often comes out full page, because that makes sense. In which case, to dismiss it, you just hit the back button, which is the kind of light dismiss version for that. Or you select something. That's the other way of it dismissing. So here's a couple of little examples of doing a context menu. So you can see there we've got, looking at the bottom one there, we've got a button which has got its content is show menu flyout. And when you tap on the button, this menu flyout, which is a context menu of other options, displays where you've got option one, option two, then we've got a separator bar, and then a couple of toggle menu flyout items. So that's an example of how you might use that. And another example at the top there of a flyout that actually has some, a stack panel in it. So you can stick any old content in these. Very flexible. This is one that's phone only, so you won't find this on big windows. This is a kind of message box on steroids. As it says, both full or partial screen. So this is a custom message box which is heavily customizable, so you can put whatever you like in it. The programming way, this is the simple way of doing it. If you're just going to show, and this is kind of a little bit like messagebox.show in code, in the old school of things. But instead, you can new up a contact dialog, set some properties on it, like the title, the content, some button text. And you can hook up event handlers to those buttons. And then you just call dialog.showAsync, and it'll show the content dialog. So that's the way you do it in code. But actually, if you want to do rich rendering, you want to create one of these and work in the XAML editor and do yourself fancy design. So actually, there's a new project item. You can project add new item. There is an option in that list, which is a content dialog. And it will add a whole XAML page and a backing file to your project. And that is effectively, you program it the same way you might build a user control. But this is your content dialog. So you can do all your fancy design. You can put pictures on it and all this kind of stuff. And just design it the same way as you would a user control or a page. And then when you want to actually run it, you'd new up an instance of this content dialog you just created. So this one is called about message. Oh, it's actually called about dialog on the picture. A little bit of something I have to fix there. But anyway, it's meant to say about dialog. My dialog equals new about dialog. And then you call the dot show async method on it. So that's how you use it. So that's very rich and nice. What about the full page controls? So when you're creating a project and adding pages into your XAML-based project, you can create an empty blank page, or there's this thing called a basic page, and I'll show you this in a demo in just a moment. And they're two blank page, as it suggests, has nothing on it, and a basic page actually does have a page title. But more importantly, the basic page comes with some plumbing code for navigation and page navigation. Like I said, I'm going to come back to this in just a moment when I come to a demo specifically about page navigation. If you want to set the page orientation, so if you've got a page that the user can use in landscape or portrait, well, just leave it as it is. But if you want to fix it to one orientation, because it only works in that one sensibly orientation, then there's this windows.graphics.display information auto rotation preferences. You can set it there, and that will set the orientation preference. That's a sticky setting. If you set it and don't unset it, you'll set it then for the whole of your app. So that's why you want to set it in your on navigated to. For if it applies to one page, set it on navigated to. So save the current setting, then set it to whatever you want. And then when you're quitting the page, then you want to reset to whatever it was before. And you can actually specify app-wide in the manifest. So this is where you're up here, and you're setting the orientation preference there. So again, just leave that. If you don't care, just leave that unchecked. And we've got pivot control, which is exactly the same as Windows Phone. I'll show you this in a moment. So you've got a nice way of swiping left to right. Windows Phone has a great way of, and we kind of get this on big windows as well. Obviously, the user gets used to horizontally swiping leftwards and right and revealing more content. So that kind of idea obviously comes came from Windows Phone and the pivot control, which has always had this idea of the physical phone screen is like a window on something much bigger behind, so the user can swipe from left to right to reveal more content. And this pivot control is a classic example of it, where you've got panes of information, and you can see the recipe there is highlighted, so that's the current page. But also just to the right and bleeding off the edge, you see ingredients. So that's the title of the next pane, and it gives a visual cue to the user that there is more content to be revealed if they just want to swipe across. And then, of course, we've got the hub. So the big hub control is kind of like the old panorama. This is very rich, where you have a big background image. It's a really beautiful landing page for the user and the nice experience. And this is same control is used on big Windows and on Windows Phone. Similar, like I said, to the Windows Phone Silverlight panorama control, but the panorama doesn't exist in this control stack. You make it visually stunning, and this is what draws the user into it, and then you have different sections, which can be all the same width, or you can actually make them a variable width. It's quite easy to build out nice experiences with that. This is the design experience, and this is kind of the XAML, where you've got a hub control, you've got your page, and then you've got your outer grid, which is the main container, and then inside it you've got a hub. Define your background, and then you've got one or more hub sections, and you just keep on creating hub sections, which is the kind of pages, if you like, that the user is looking at. When you set the background image, you can set a background image on the page, or you can set it on the hub, but you want to make sure you set it on the hub, because you get this nice parallax effect, and the user gets this nice feeling of depth, and the page background moves across at a different speed from the foreground, so you get a real nice effect. Okay, let's have a look at some of this kind of stuff now. So this is an old favorite, which I'm sure some of you have come across before, which is the Contoso cookbook. So let's just run this. On the emulator. So here's my landing page. I can swipe across its touch sensor, so I can swipe across in the emulator. And look, I was saying about the background image is moving across. The header moves at one speed, the foreground content moves at a different, and then your background is moving even slower in the background, but it still all moves across. So you get this lovely, a nice parallax effect, and it's very rich. And this is actually didn't take me very long to build this out. I mean, obviously I had pivot versions of the Contoso cookbook before, so I had all the content and all the pictures. But this was really quite simple to build out. And it's a lovely, rich experience. And we've got a version for big Windows as well. But just to sort of show you how that is built out, the home page is the launch page, is this hubpage.xaml. So let's make this a bit better. So there's my design window where you can see what's going on. Here's all the XAML in here. And you can see that we've got the top, there's this page resources. I'm going to talk about that in just a moment, so just collapse that. But this is the design of this app, if you like, the UI for this page, where we've got the grid background. And here's our hub control. And we've got our hub background there, an image brus, which is pointing at a file called assets-hub-background.png. I'll come back to that in just a moment. But then underneath that, we've got one hub section, which has got a user control in it. We've got another hub section. And the layout of this, and this is the Chinese. The first one was regions, which was the regions list. There you go. You can see the designer is updating as I do this. And then the second one is the Chinese one, which has a bunch of images on it. And this is The layout for what you're seeing on that hub section is defined here in this data template. So it's a grid view control, which is why we're seeing a grid of images. And in it's got an items wrap grid. So it's actually showing the pictures stand. It's using a standard item template, which is one of the supplied ones, which gives you this tile layout with overlaid with some text. And then we've got the French section, which is a different layout. And I've just used different layouts just to kind of make it visually interesting for the user. And again, another list view here for that one. So that's a list view instead of a grid view. And then this one is the German one, which, just to be boring, is a kind of more textual one. So, sorry, yeah, I haven't got any, you know, I love German food and everything. It's just for experience. It's just to show you different stuff. And then we've got a stack panel with two text blocks in that. And then we got Indian, and so it goes on, you see. So you end up with a lovely, rich thing. I'll just run it for you again, just to show something else. There's the landing page. And any of these, you can tap on one of the items, and it takes you now to a different... This is actually a pivot. So you can see the pivot is again, gives you that scrolling from left to right, but it's not hasn't got that background image, so it's a slightly kind of sparser. And in the recipes list, you can then choose that. And now we're into another pivot, which is showing the ingredients and the nice picture and the instructions and all this sort of thing. In the Jumpstart, I essentially build this app out, so I take you through step by step. So how to build all this content and make it look like this. I want to just, and then go back. And I want to call out, you see this background image here? And you see it's darkened. It's darkened so that the white text, the foreground text, is all showing quite well. Let's just have a quick look at, dig into that, because that's kind of an interesting thing about this thing. You see this image brush here. This is where it's defined. And the image that we're looking at is assets/hub-background.png. So this is an interesting thing about the Windows XAML stack, because if we look into assets up here, you'll see if you look for hub-background.png, you won't find it. It's not there. In fact, what we've got is something called hub-background.theme-dark.png and hub-background.theme-light.png. So this is something about Windows Phone, which is something, if you're coming from Windows, you may not be quite so aware of, because actually you can kind of do this on Windows, but nobody does. But on Windows Phone, you can do this. Users can do this. And some do. In that they select their theme and their accent color. So you can wake up in the morning and think, oh, do you know what, today feels like a red day. You know, so there you go. And then what that actually does is your accent, the main color of your colors, the tiles that use the accent color, which tends to be the first party ones, and all the, you know, the coloring in here, ends up being red. So that's one thing you can do. But the other thing, the most important thing you can do that from the point of this, is that you can change your background from dark to light. So your apps need to be aware of this. Now the point of this is that we've got a light theme. If you start doing things like display this text, foreground color equals white, which XAML will allow you to do, then when your user switches their phone from dark to light, what happens is they end up with white text on a white background. This is not a good user experience because they can't read it. So you need to be aware of this and test, and you can test. Now look, you see this in the designer at the moment. It's a dark image. It's actually picking up hub background theme dark, which is this one here, which I can hover the mouse over. You can just see there. And the other one is hub background theme light. And basically all I did is I used paint.net and I had an image and then I just put a semi-opaque rectangle over the top of it. One was black and one was white and it was kind of 50% see-through. And that's how I ended up with my different versions of that. But yeah, you can actually, so the background, and you can go to this device tag and you can choose to you can change your accent color even in the designer if you want to. But you can also, most importantly, change the theme. And now, reveal that, it's changed it. And it's automatically picking up that. There's a third option on this, which actually I haven't built into this, but if you create a new hub app, I'll do that File, New, Project, Windows Phone, Hub App, Windows Phone, App 2, that'll do. And this is a good trick. This kind of does the same thing, but also has an additional thing, which is this has a background image in assets, which is Hub Background Theme Dark, which is blue, and Hub Background Theme Light, which is orange for some reason. But also what it does is, if you look at the XAML, we have the, scroll down, find our hub. There it is, hub. The background here is actually set to something called a theme resource, hub background image brush. What that is, if we can go to the definition of hub background image, image brush, and it's defined, here it is, in two ways. It's defined in here, this is in your app.xaml, this is your global resources. This is something, a thing called theme dictionaries, but you see we've got resource dictionary default, which means default contrast. Now what this is supporting people who have turned on some of the accessibility settings. So because the other thing you can do in here, in device tab, you can set it to light and dark, and it changes, as you can see in the background there, it's changing to orange or to the blue background. But the other thing that is high contrast, for people who have got poor vision or something, they want to have their apps really easy to read, you can turn the background off altogether. So again, you should test your apps really. I mean, obviously we all tend to get carried away with lovely pictures and everything, but you've got to think also about, admittedly, small percentage of your user community, but some people are going to be using this phone who, A, are old like me and need to have big text, so they need to have, everything needs to be big, and you can change that in the phone settings, and all the controls adapt to text size as well. But then other people who are visually impaired might switch on, and again, this is in settings, they can turn on high contrast. And if you're going to be a good citizen, you want your apps to work well for those people as well. So the way it's done it is in app.xaml, by making it a theme resource, it goes and picks up the normal hub background image brush, which goes and gets the image for sort of people who have got the not the high contrast set. But for people who have got the high contrast set, it just turns off the image altogether, which is what this is doing here. So that's a nice trick. Right. So that was the hub control and that sort of thing. What about some of the what we call the system UI, app bar, status bar, soft buttons, that kind of stuff. So what we're talking about there with the system UI is the status bar at the top, which is where you get your little icons, your signal strength, battery strength, and whether you've got a network and all that kind of stuff, and the new notifications icon. You've also got the app bar at the bottom, which is your buttons, the navigation bar. Now, there is a slight difference here, because on big Windows, that's kind of part of the app UI. So in big Windows, when you're creating a Windows Store app for big Windows, you typically will have a bottom app bar with navigation stuff on it, which if the user has to swipe down from the top of the screen to reveal. Yeah, and you can actually have a top app bar as well, which some apps will make use of. We don't have top app bars on the phone, but we do have bottom app bar. But it's kind of... so. On big Windows, you kind of think of it's more like app UI, which is kind of transient and it's under the control of the developer. This is still programmable by the developer, but we consider it to be system UI, and it's kind of owned more by the OS, if you like. There's a subtle difference because I'll show you what happens in a minute. Before I move off this slide, there's also the buttons bit at the bottom. Every Windows phone that any of you have had up till now has got hardware buttons on the bottom. So the new ones that are going to come out, the new ones that were shown, the new next generation of Nokias and actually from a lot of other manufacturers as well, not going to have hardware buttons on the bottom. They're going to have soft buttons. So they're actually going to be rendered on the screen. So the whole screen is just going to be one slab of glass, and the actual navigation buttons will be rendered on there as well. They'll work just the same way. It doesn't change the user experience. But this actually helps phone manufacturers. It allows them to create one phone design, and then they can slap whatever operating system on it, Android or ours or anybody else's, and actually brings the costs down. And then also allows a few things, like if you're showing full-screen video, it means you can actually use the whole screen, not just the bit where the buttons aren't. So there's some actual advantages there. Now, this app bar, the bottom app bar, Did any of you see Build 2013 when they were announcing Windows 8.1 and all that sort of thing, loads of the new controls? Some of the new controls, this was one of those new controls that was announced then for big Windows. And this was evidence that already, ways back, and this has been going on for a long time, the Windows Phone and the Windows teams were already converged and were already working together as one team ways back before this all became public knowledge. And this control is another one of those adaptive controls that works slightly differently on big Windows than it does on the phone. But this is how you program your app bar. And we've got our primary commands and we've got our secondary commands. So primary commands look like, so that you, that XAML we got there, the primary commands are rendered as your regular buttons, and you can have up to four on Windows Phone. And then underneath that, your secondary commands will end up as text menu items underneath. So exactly the same as we used to program in Silverlight, but just programmed a different way. With the difference, we've got a fantastic number of icons to draw upon. So differences from Windows, we don't have a top app bar. And it's not shown by a gesture. You know, it's programmable, but so you, from code you can set the visibility to be collapsed or visible. But it's, you know, on big Windows, if a user wants to see the app bar, they have to just swipe on the screen, which is not always necessarily discoverable. But it's a bit more under your control from the app developer's point of view on phone. You can have a minimal one. That little image there is of a minimized app bar. And the XAML is exactly the same. So you can share the XAML between your phone UI and your Windows UI, but just certain properties are just going to be ignored on the phone. I mean, you know, this is sticky property, which you can use on big Windows to make the app bar sort of stick on the screen. Well, it's always sticky on phone. And there's open and closed events on big Windows, which just don't fire on the phone because there isn't the same concept. Yeah, so app bar button icons, we have masses of these because we've got this Seago UI symbol thing, symbol icons, which is really nice. You just put a name in, and the tools really help you to find all the nice buttons. And you can do bitmaps and font icons and paths, so it's really, really flexible how you can design these sort of things. And you can have flyouts on app bar buttons as well. So this is an example of using a flyout on an app bar button. So when you tap on the button, instead what you get is like a context menu of sub options will come up. So that's really nice. This is an example of showing photo and video coming up when the user taps the little app bar button there. So moving on to the other end of the screen, the top end of the screen, the status bar. Now, by default, this always is visible and always has a transparent background on it. You can change that. You can set the background color. And you can change the opacity of it as well. There's no XAML for this. You don't do this in XAML at all. So it's all programmed through code only. And there's various bits of code shown on the screen there for showing it, hiding it, setting the background color, changing the opacity. And if you want to know the size of it, which most of the time you won't care, which are for reasons I'll explain in a moment, but if you want to know the size of it, you can. So there you go. If you want to put a progress indicator on it, that's how you do it. You get status bar, get for current view, show async. That shows the status bar. And then you go status bar, get for current view, progress indicator. You can set some properties on it, like the text, and set whether it's indeterminate, or you can actually set it, you know, you can control the value across the screen of what it's showing, and then show async. So very simple to program that. And that's actually, for showing progress bars, that's kind of the default phone style. There's nothing wrong with having progress indicators in the middle of the screen if it makes sense, but typically if you're kind of fetching something from a network, you probably just put it on the top. That kind of is what users are used to seeing. So this is the way you do it. Yeah, so I was going to mention about, I said, you know, most of the time you won't care what the status bar size is. And this is because the content area, so when you're designing your XAML that's displayed on the screen, 00 for you is top left corner, which starts underneath the status bar. So your content area starts underneath it automatically. Now, interestingly, I said that the status bar is transparent, so what shows through, you know? And actually, you can set the page background color if you want to control the color that's shining through it, or you can actually set the background color of the status bar to something explicit. So you do have to think about the color behind it, but other than that, your content all starts underneath it, so you don't have to make any space for it or anything. Now, and that, the same happens with the app bar. So if the app bar displays, you know, and you've got a list or something, you don't have to put any code in to handle that. The content area adjusts accordingly, automatically. So, you know, if you've got a scroll bar or something, it will all take care of that. You don't have to put any code in, so that's called kind of nice. Now, you can override this automatic resizing behavior. It actually came in quite late. So when we were playing with early builds of Windows Phone, we had loads of horrible code in detecting when the app bar displayed and when the screen orientation changed, and it was horrible. We managed to, in later demos, we deleted all of that because the system took care of it. But you might have a use case where you don't want that to happen. So you want to have full control of the full screen area. And if you do that, you can use that line of code at the bottom, applicationview.getForCurrentView, set layout bounds, applicationViewLayoutBounds.coreWindowBounds. That basically means your content area is the whole thing. But that does mean you need to add all that nasty code that we used to have for detecting when the status bar is there and how big it is and where your content should start so it's not a clue, it's not overwritten, and if the app bar comes up and all that sort of stuff. You might have a reason for doing that. Most of the time, you're not. So that's just kind of so you know about it. And like I said, the soft buttons, they are also included in all of this, so your content area will just take account of that. Showing full video, and they disappear until you touch the screen, and then it all comes back, so that's kind of nice. I've just got a quick demo just to drive that all home a little bit. This page is basically what you saw on the slides there. What I'm going to do, let's go for broke. I hope I've got enough memory. And it will show you, it shows you the visible bounds, the size of your area, and there's a long list of content there, so you can see what happens. And then we've got various things to control it. Let's just run it on this emulator that's already up. And as you can see, to start with at the moment, the app bar is visible. My page background is set to a solid color brush of green. So this property on big Windows is ignored. You can set it, but it will be ignored. But actually on Windows it is, on Windows Phone it is observed. So you can see it shining through because the status bar is transparent, unless I click this, in which case we set it to a nice cobalt. The visible bounds hasn't changed. The height of this area, this is the content area, at the moment is a height of 580 and the width is 400. And if we set the status bar to be hidden, it goes up to 606 by 400. So the content area is automatically I haven't had to write any code, that just happens. App bar is still, it's 606 by 400. We could make it transparent. The page background is now shining through it. It doesn't change the content area. We could hide it all together, and now we're getting the full screen size, which is 667-ish by 400. And I can hear muttering in the room. You're thinking, oh, that's interesting. Let's go for this one, a 4.7-inch emulator. Which isn't obviously really 4.7-inch because it's kind of scaled a little bit. So there was that one. But that one is at, what are we at, 87%. And this one, when it gets there, come on, just boot this one up, is 57%. So actually this is physically larger. We set this to 57, then we're doing a comparative side by side. Oh, that doesn't look right either, does it? That's what it says. So this is taking a little while to boot up. Glad I've actually. You start trying to run a couple of these emulators side by side, the bigger ones. I've got two gig devices. So you need to have, these are all Hyper-V virtual machines, so you need to have a fairly meaty PC with a fairly large amount of RAM on it if you want to start running emulators side by side. This is taking a little while to boot. I might just let it boot in the background and just come back to it. Give it a second more. I'll come back to it, because actually it will back up nicely a point I'm about to come onto in a few slides' time. Before I do that, let's talk a little bit about page navigation. So, we have a single window. Our Windows Store apps, for big windows, you can have multiple windows now. They used to be single window, but now you can actually have multiple windows. But for phone apps, it's only ever going to be one window, and that will contain, typically, one frame. It's actually your bootstrap logic, which most of you will have no reason ever to change. Oh, my emulator's up. It's popped into the foreground. Oh, right, okay. So let's just quickly digress back to that then, since it's kind of intruding on things. Just to give you this one. Let me just make it a bit bigger, because that's just nonsense. This one, what's this app called? Oh, Visible Bounds Demo, yeah. So this one, if you remember, is hide the app bar, let's hide the status bar, 666 by 400. This one, hide the app bar and hide the status bar, is 711 by 400. So we've got a new layout system, which I'm going to come on to in a little while, which creates interesting situations for designers, and that all devices are not the same anymore. Which on Windows Phone 8, we had this kind of convenient little convention that actually every device was 800 by 480. And that was true whether it was a 4.5-inch device or it was a 6-inch device. But that did kind of cause some comically large UI on occasions. So anyway, back to this Windows Frames and Pages. So yeah, so we have a window, we have a frame in it, and inside your frame, you will display your page, and a page is obviously full screen as well. So there is this hierarchy of objects, but what you're looking at is the page, which is inside this invisible thing called a frame. The frame is created on app launch and is the container for the pages. So your on-launched logic, which comes to you in the new project templates, you don't have to code this, it's given to you for free. You'll see the logic in there. This is the logic that instantiates your frame on launch and sets the window.current.content to be that frame. So this is the frame being put into the window. And then you would call something like if the frame.content equals null, which is the bit of the code at the bottom there, navigate to a page. So you navigate to main page. So this is now instantiating a page and putting it into the frame. Now this frame, and then as you navigate through different pages in your app, the frame is recording the navigation history. So it knows you went from this page to that page, and when you navigated from that page, it passed this navigation parameter. So it records all that information, which becomes important later on when your app is suspended or terminated, because that information needs to be stored away and restored later on when you come back from termination. Unfortunately, I haven't got time this morning to talk much about the app life cycle. That's a whole other topic. But this navigation history is part of that story, if you like, of having your app suspend and then come back. So to navigate between pages, you just call frame.navigate. Now, on Windows Phone 8 Silverlight, in the Silverlight app framework, we actually navigate to URIs. So you have a URI, which is the address of a page that you're going to. It's different with WinRT XAML. You actually navigate to a type. So you have created a page called My Detail Page, and then you just say, you're going from main page to My Detail Page, you go frame.navigate type of My Detail Page. And you can pass some data, some object, whatever you want to pass across. And then in My Detail Page, it will look at that object and set itself up accordingly. So you've got to figure out what parameters to pass from page A to page B in order to get the right things to happen. And you can navigate back in code as well. This dot frame. Go back would navigate back through the navigation history. You should always dress it up in this. You first of all check the frame can go back. There are various ways of launching an app, which means that perhaps your app will not always be launched on main page, so you've always got to test your assumptions about how your user got to a page. So just get into the habit of always checking. If this frame can go back, then go back. If they can't go back, then you might want to think about your user scenario and how they've ended up here. But typically you want to test for that. Now, navigating back with a button like that on Windows Phone, you see this button in the middle of the second page? That's bad UI. You generally don't you might have some circumstances where that's appropriate, but generally that's bad UI. Because the phone way of doing things is this back button here. Back button there. The hardware back button. And that's the one that the users are used to using. I picked up an Android phone the other day. I know I meant to use all these other devices because, you know, it's important to know, you know, they're all the systems have got different strengths and this sort of thing. And it was an iPhone, that's right. I picked up an iPhone. It was worse than that. They're all the same to me, just other phones. And I picked this iPhone and somebody came to my house and said, "How do I get onto your Wi-Fi?" And I said, "Well, you just go to the Wi-Fi settings and select it and this sort of thing." And they said, "Oh, I don't know, you do it." And they handed this thing to me. And I said, "What is this?" And then they said, "Oh my God, it's so archaic. What is all these icon things?" And this, anyway, I was suitably rude about it. And they said, "It's an iPhone." "Oh," I said, "Oh, okay, nice, okay." So I managed to find the settings and this sort of thing and go in and get into Wi-Fi. And I managed to connect to our network and wash my hands afterwards, of course. But then I was looking for the back button. How'd you go back? I said, "How'd you go back on this thing?" And they don't have a back button. So it's like different ways of using phones. But we have a back button, and people like it. So this back button, what do you have to do with it? So the standard usage is that when a user hits the back button, your app should navigate back, of course. Or maybe if it's showing some transient UI at the time, then you just remove the transient UI. So basically, you've got to take them back to what they were doing, what they were looking at before. Now, there is a difference here between Windows Phone Silverlight and WinRT XAML. So in the Windows Phone Silverlight, you hit the back button on a page, and the framework would automatically navigate you back to the previous page. And it just did that for you, and it's kind of a given. In WinRT XAML apps, you hit the back button. It doesn't at all navigate back to the previous page. It actually just it suspends your app. Regardless of which page you're on, it suspends your app and goes back to the previous app. So that's the default behavior. So clearly, that's not good user experience. So we have to put some code to override this behavior. And this is where it gets interesting. Some of the new project templates do this for you, and some do not. And this is going to be something that people are going to take a bit of time getting a feeling for. So, back key handling. So if you create a new app, and if you remember the new project templates I showed you right at the beginning, there's a blank app, and then you've got various other ones. There's the hub app. What else have we got? There's a couple of other project templates in there. Oh, yeah, pivot app. Yeah, hub app and pivot app. It says on the slide. Hub app and pivot app templates do have back key navigation handling built into them. The blank app does not. So if you create a blank app, which you end up with a nice single page, and then you add another page to it, it won't actually handle the navigation. So you need to add a bit of code, something like this, if you start from a blank app, which is hardwarebuttons.backpressed, you've got to hook up the backpressed event. And then you put this little bit of voodoo on the bottom here, which is whenever the back key is pressed, you go and find the frame, and then if frame can go back, you go back. So, and then you say e.handled equals done equals true. So you're saying to the system, "All right, I've handled this, you don't have to worry about it." So you're overriding the normal navigate back to the previous app behavior that it would otherwise do. And that's how you do it, that's how you would do it, and that would apply for all your pages in your app, and that's just a system-wide back key handling, nice and simple. In certain circumstances, you need to have specific back key handling on a page, so you can wire it into a page as well, which is a similar thing, but instead of doing it in your app.xaml, you're doing it on the page. So here we're wiring up the back key pressed event in your unnavigated to. We're unwiring it again on unnavigated from, so you're not got any sort of hanging. This is how you get things like what they call a managed code memory leak. It's not really a memory leak, but these hanging references if you don't undo this event handler, that reference, not in this specific case actually, but in certain circumstances, you can end up with objects that can't be garbage collected because they're still alive, because somebody's still got a reference to them. This actually happens where you've got an event that you're wiring up that's in a different class. But it's always best good practice to unwire these events when you're navigating from. And then kind of, you know, whatever logic when that hardware back key button is pressed you need. So this is an example of a page that's showing some secondary UI, and you want that to disappear and just go back to the primary UI of that page rather than navigate back through pages, or indeed the worst case, which is navigate back through apps. So a bit of fun and page there, fun and games there. Yeah, sure.
Is it also possible to override the find button?
The search button. That's always been a bit of a bugbear, that, hasn't it? This wonderful third button that doesn't really do anything. It starts it's got a new purpose. It starts Cortana now. It does the Cortana, the voice thing.
Yeah.
So now you press that button and it'll launch Cortana. Which, of course, isn't going to release in the Netherlands for a while. But to answer your question, unfortunately, we still can't program that button. It's a system UI. So, yeah, on Windows Phone 8, it just launches Bing. And that in Windows Phone 8.1, it will launch Bing, unless you've got Cortana, in which case it will launch Cortana. So. All right. And let's. Here's another version of the Contoso cookbook. So here's my main page. And there we go. So there's my main page. You can see we've got an app bar, which has just got a button on it, which shows a flyout, actually, with a list box on it, which is kind of interesting. But what I'm going to do is add another button to it. So a nice way of doing that is in the document outline is command bar. So on a new app, you can go in here and just right-click and say add command bar. It's grayed out at the moment because I already have got one. So we can add an app bar button to my secondary commands, and here we are. It's added it in as secondary commands. Let's put an about page on here, and we can go off to properties. Let's have an event handler for the click event on that button. And I want to add, before I put my navigate in, I can add existing item to this project, which is over here somewhere. Items, about page.xaml. So add this. So I've got a new about page, which is very simple, just shows the details of about the app. So back in my code, obviously I can just go frame.navigate type of, and this is an about page I want to go to. No parameter needed. And that should all work. So let's just run this on our WVJ emulator. So here we go. Let's make that a bit bigger. What was it before? 87%. There we go. There's our flyout. Ooh, you see, I've got my... There we go. So that clearly didn't work. I need to do a bit of design on that to make sure that works in the white. That's horrible. Let's change this. Settings. Start the theme. Go to the back to the dark background. Thank you very much. Okay, so there we go. There's my list of. That's a flyout, which is not actually a very nice UI. I changed this to a pivot later on. We've got an about page. We go to the about page, and there's our about page. I'm going to hit the back button now, and the app has gone back to the previous app because I haven't got any back key handling in this. So this is where you need to add in that. That logic into this. You kind of go in here and you do something like hardware, what is it? Hardware buttons. So I just need to resolve that. Using windows.phone.ui.input.backpressed. And there's also event handlers there for camera buttons, as you can see. A plus equals tab. And we can create that. Oh. Plus equals. Come on. Plus equals. Oh, come on. Plus equals. Just do it for me. It was the semicolon that was confusing it. And then you can do your, you know, get your frame. Root frame equals rot frame. Why not? That'll do. Window.current.content as frame. And then if rot frame does not equal, it should be root frame, of course. Null. Just to check a bit of code in there, then we just say if rot frame dot can go back, then rot frame dot go back. So nice and simple. And then, obviously, running that now, we should be in good shape with this. We can go to our About page. One thing I'll point out, by the way, all these page animations, you see the page animations? Get all them for free. This is nice for a Windows Phone Silverlight developer, because it was too hard. And now back. Oh, it doesn't work. What did I do wrong? Oh, I didn't put e.handled equals true. Right. Now, so you need to not only do that, but you need to tell it you've handled it. It's equal to true. Now, I'll run that again, but you'll know it will work. So I actually want to show you something else as well before I move on from this. This was an app I built using new project, this blank template, this one, blank app, okay, which doesn't have any handling in it. If you want to upgrade, one way of doing it is you can do your hardware key handling like that manually, or you can add a new item, which is a basic page. And a basic page, you get this thing. It says, this addition depends on files that are missing from your project. Without these files, you must resolve dependencies on the common, blah, 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 blah. Do you want to add these? And you say, yes, I do. Because, now what this does is, you get a page with a header on it. That's incidental. It's a blank page, but it's got a bit of header on it. But what's interesting is it's added all of these things, this common folder, navigation helper, observable dictionary, relay commander, suspension manager. These are all, I haven't got time to go into the programming of these, but these are all helpful classes for doing navigating between pages and also for saving state when you get suspended. Yeah, and that page that we just added has within it some plumbing already. So it has a navigation helper, an observable dictionary, and it initiates this, and it has these event handlers. And hidden away at the bottom, it has some registration where it in the OnNavigator 2, it wires itself up to this thing called navigation helper. Now, navigation helper inside it has some code somewhere that does your hardware buttons, key press handling for it. So you don't have to do the manual stuff that I showed you. So you've got two approaches. You can adopt this model, and not everybody likes Navigation Helper and Suspension Manager. It's worth mentioning. You will read online various people doing blogs saying, I really don't like this because I've got my alternative version. So whichever works for you. But this is obviously the one that's in the template, so will be the one that gets used by most people. So that's just to raise your awareness on that being there as well. Okay, now lastly, on this fly through the key essentials things, and I've already kind of given you a hint of this when I showed you the visible bounds thing. So under Windows Phone 8.0, we have this very convenient, as I mentioned before, very convenient arrangement that actually every phone was 480 pixels, logical pixels wide, and they were all either 800 or 856. So the 720p or the 1080p phones were 856, and the other ones were WVGA and WXGA, they were 800. And they were all the same, which was nice because you just had to build for one size. Apart from the fact that, obviously, when these super phones came out, the 1520s and 1320s last year, these big 6-inch things, if you had a UI that was designed for a standard 4.5-inch screen, it starts to look, it's all right, but it starts to look a bit silly sometimes on these big screens, you know. So it's not optimal. So we changed the system. Here we are. That's kind of side by side of all the increasingly diverse Windows phones. And who knows that I don't know if they're going to get bigger than 6 inches. But and also this, well, you know, maybe we'll get even bigger devices running this operating system. So it needs to be flexible. And the other thing is as well, we also use it in different orientations. That's something you need to worry about as well. This is not specific to phone. Tablets as well obviously get used in different orientations. And on tablet as well, you've got this idea of apps running side by side. So they also have to be very flexible. So we need a layout system that works across all of these devices, phones and tablets. So yeah, a recap on the Windows Phone 8. This was the Windows Phone 8 today using the Silverlight XAML system. And as like I said, all of them are 480 wide, and then it varies. Oh, I said 856. I'm sorry, 853, correct myself, for the 720p and the 1080p. But they are... It's a convenience, but it's not really very good because, and actually we know it's not very good because even with GDR3, update 3 for Windows Phone 8 that came out in, September, October last year, this brought in this wide start screen. So the bigger screen devices, these 6-inch, have what we call 3 columns, which means you can have 6 mini tiles across. Actually, Windows Phone 8.1, you can have that on all sized phone, so that's an option if you want that screen start screen layout. You can have it even on the small screen devices now. But we brought that in because it was a reflection that, you know, you can show more content. So let's use this big screen space, the big screen size, and show more stuff. But that was kind of difficult to do with Silverlight apps. So we got a new approach. We've got this infinite virtual canvas. So the idea is that for Windows XAML apps, whether it's phone, whether it's tablet, whether it's PC, whether it's perceptive pixel displays, huge wall-mounted displays, it's the same basic layout system. But we have this idea of view pixels that we're going to give you, which is the logical layout size that you design to. And it's going to be more based on the physical size, but also has some impact on the usability. Because the other thing is, with a phone, you tend to look at it like that. With a tablet, you tend to look at it like that. With a PC, you tend to look at it like that. And for a TV, you're looking at something over there. So again, one size doesn't quite fit all. So we've got this system that I'll try and explain now, which works across all of these different usage scenarios. So we first of all have this, this idea of a scale factor, which is the actual physical pixels divided by the width, multiplied by this thing called a platform constant. This platform constant is this one that takes account of the, you know, how close you tend to look at it. So there is this kind of work comes into it. And this results in this scale factor, which is the minimal one rounded to nearest 0.2. And when you're designing, you can actually put images and tile size and this sort of thing into your XAML projects, which are based on a scale factor. So we have 100, which is 1.0, 140, which is the typical scale factor for the smaller Windows Phone devices, going up to 240 for the big screen devices, and it changes as well with almonds. So yeah, this platform constant depends on the viewing distance, the tends to the usage scenario. It's kind of hard to get your head around this, so I'm not going to spend too much time. But the essential thing you need to understand is this scale factor is applied to the raw pixel size of the display. And this gives you results in a view pixels. So what this actually means is that if you've got, imagine 3 different devices that are all physically the same size, 5.5-inch screens, but they have different quality of resolution screens on them. So the left-hand one is a 960 by 540, a WVGA screen. And then the middle one might be an HD screen. And then the one on the right might be a true HD screen. So they've got different screen resolutions, different actual pixel densities physically. But they're all physically, they're all the same size. So from a user's perspective, what do they expect? They want to see the same amount of content on each of those devices, but they expect perhaps to be seeing it in better quality. So that's where we're aiming for. So from a designing point of view, your view pixels are 800 by 450 for all of these devices by doing this calculation. So it becomes the actual display size you're working with is more based on the physical size than anything else. So yeah, if you've got the same resolution, the same is conversely true as well. Here we've got two devices that are both 1920 by 1080 screens, but they're physically very different, a 4.7-inch and a 5.5-inch. But the view pixels, although the pixel density is the actual raw pixels are the same on these two displays, because they're physically different sizes, the view pixels is what comes out the bottom. So you get the right thing happens from a designer's point of view. The small screen is 368 by 686. The bigger screen is 450 by 800. It's kind of what you expect. Oh, and this one is 491 by 873. So you're getting the right thing happening from a designer's point of view. And in Visual Studio, the emulators, I pointed this out already, are marked with different physical sizes, so you can test on different physical sizes. What does this mean for you designing a XAML page? How do you design a XAML page that's going to work within this system? Well, there's three things you need to think about. First of all, you can provide bitmap images that are sort of actual work with the physical pixel density, so you get the best quality image showing in all of these circumstances. I haven't got time to go into this. I will talk about this one a bit more. Building a responsive UI, which basically means don't have any hard-coded widths. Allow the design to flow and make use of the available space. And I'll show you in a minute some things. If you really need to know the raw pixels, the raw pixel density, the raw real physical information about the screen, you can get it for display information. That's useful if you want to download and scale an image that you're downloading from the web, and then you want to show it on the screen. So the build responsive UI, what does that mean? So there are loads of factors that determine how big something displays in XAML. I mean, here we've got, a lot of things. We've got an image. It's actually a button. The Mona Lisa is a button, which is button.content as an image. But you can see that this button has got horizontal alignment and vertical alignment. It's got some margin setting on it and some padding. All of this determines what it looks like. And then you've got the height of the image and the stretch thing. And so there's many different factors that all work together to determine the physical, actual size of what you're looking at. But generally, the rule is avoid explicit sizing of elements and let the... So just when you're putting content onto a page, just let it fill the cell where you're putting it. So it will automatically resize. Your friend here is the grid. So when you have a grid with rows and columns, you've got three types of sizing: star sizing, auto sizing, and pixel sizing. So here we've got an example of three columns that are using three different things. So auto sizing means it just takes up enough room. It sizes itself automatically to the right size to hold whatever content you've put in it. So if you put a stack panel in there with a couple of text blocks, it will be just the right size to hold that stack panel. That's an auto column or row. And then star columns are just proportional dividing up the space. So here we've got these three columns here. The right-hand column, auto, is just enough to hold whatever you put in it. And then the remainder is divided into three, and two-thirds goes to the left column, and one-third goes to the middle column. So this is a nice flow. This is going to proportionately size according to the physical size of wherever you put this grid. And same obviously applies with rows as well. So you end up with these cells that dynamically flow and resize according to where you put this grid. And here's an example with a 711 by 400 sized page, which we've put a grid view onto it. And a grid view is automatically flows to show the available stuff that's on it. And we've got the header, which is an auto size thing, and then we've got the grid view, and then at the bottom we've got left and right. And the grid in the middle is one star, so it automatically scales, automatically takes whatever size is left after those two auto rows have taken what they need. And that means on a bigger display, this 1067 by 600, the header stays the same because it's auto. The left-right bit at the bottom stays the same because that was auto. And then the middle bit, the grid view, expands and can show more of these cells. So you generally want to use the text blocks, and rich text blocks can automatically resize and display more text. Content in scroll viewers and items control will generally grow to take the space. And if you want to simply scale the content as it was designed, there's also another control called the viewbox control that you can use. So here's an example of using a text block which will automatically grow. You see this text block has been put into grid row 1. Grid row 1 is using 1/5 of the row height of this grid, because it's a 1-star and the other two rows are 2-stars. And then this grid on a small display, it fits in so much text. And then you should use exactly the same layout on a bigger display, and of course the user will sees the same text, but it's grown to fill the available space. Similarly with a canvas, it's just growing there to... this is an example of a view box where you've got something like an image and that's just automatically being scaled. So for stuff that doesn't adapt like that, you can do that. I've got a quick demo, but I'm actually out of time, which kind of just drills that home a little bit. So if anybody wants to see that, I can share that with you. That's what I had for you. So we're done, so if anybody's got any questions, it's probably best if you just come up and have a chat with me now, so I can clear the desks for ready for the next one. All I'm going to say is thank you very much for coming. I hope you enjoyed that and it was useful, and have fun building Windows XAML apps for Windows Phone. Thanks a lot.